What is it that makes these conversations so difficult for retailers to have this succession planning or exit strategy talk?
There's really two major fears: the sense of a loss of control. It's also the fear of facing the inevitable. And I've seen so many cases over the years where they struggle to do that and there's no plan in place. And that's just really, really sad, because that's going to leave all kinds of family disharmony and all kinds of potential financial losses to the up and coming family.
Welcome into the Independent Thinking Podcast. This is your host, Rob Stott. It's going to sound kind of crazy, but the idea for this episode was really born out of the recent announcement that Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos was stepping down from his post and, in an effort to focus more on his businesses with Blue Origin, The Washington Post, and other charitable efforts and things like that. And the company announced in a letter that they had selected Andy Jassy, who is the head of the web services division, to be the new CEO. And I know, what's the connection here? Amazon, a major international corporation, and we're a membership group of small independent retailers, but the idea is there. Amazon, for as big as they are, has a succession plan in place, and being able to ensure the continued success of a company, whether large and multi-trillion dollars worth of business or a small independent retailer, the idea is the same. And, to ensure the continued success of that business, you have to have a plan in place. And, you have to ensure that you know what steps are going to take place, whether it's when you're ready to retire or other unforeseen events happen, that your business, what you have poured your heart and soul into as a business owner, your legacy can continue. And so we decided to have that conversation. It's one that I know for a lot of business owners is not easy to have or to want to think about, but we wanted to have it, wanted to start that conversation, and did so with nationwide vendor partner JRM Sales and Management. Joe Malevsky is co-founder and CEO of JRM, and a very intelligent and bright man that had a lot of great ideas to share about succession planning. That JRM is involved in a lot of stuff, but they do a lot of work with succession planning and exit strategies for small businesses. And it's a company that focuses. They are, an independent business in and of themselves and family run. And Joe was kind enough to spend some time chatting with us between calls with his clients to, shed some light on what the challenges are with succession planning, how these conversations happen, what, hurdles business owners have to face as they go through succession planning and planning for, their exit strategy or their next phase in life. So just a conversation, one we don't hear a lot because it doesn't happen a lot. And, we want to hope to start to change that. Maybe this podcast is just one step in the efforts to make succession planning more of a common thing, in this space. As we dive into a lot of great numbers to share, a lot of great insights on the importance of it. So we're just going to go ahead and dive into this podcast with Joe Malevsky of JRM. All right, we are back on the Independent Thinking Podcast and been really excited and looking forward to this conversation. And Mr. Joe Malevsky, I appreciate you taking the time and chatting in. Where are you guys based out of?
We are located a suburb of Atlanta called Acworth. It is approximately about a 30-minute drive from downtown, somewhere up in the area on the northwest side.
Okay, so you guys avoided all of this winter weather for the most part. Is that true this past couple weeks?
Yeah, we did, but I didn't. I happened to be up in Ohio and in Kansas City last week, so got hit with a blizzard and some near zero temperatures. So,
I couldn't avoid it.
Part of the really positive stuff that I do for a living, I guess.
Right? There you go. But
actually, I kind of enjoyed it because we don't see snow here at all in Atlanta. And sure saw it up there, no question about it.
No, and I know, thinking back a couple of years ago, I think Atlanta, a half an inch, I know it does a number to the area down there. So the less winter weather you guys can get, the better, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
No, but Mr. Malevsky from CEO and founder JRM Sales and Management, you know, we got an awesome, I kind of talked about it already, but you know, something I've been looking forward to diving into with succession planning and, you know, a very important topic. But before we get into that, I want to, you know, get a chance to learn a little bit about you and your company and kind of what you bring to the table.
Sure. Well, we are a consulting company. We work exclusively with independent retailers of all shapes and sizes. We've had a relationship now with Mega Group and Nationwide for 20 years. The company was founded in January of 2001. My first client was a company in Batesville, Arkansas. In January, my second one was in Russellville, Arkansas. Both members of Mega Group, and of course, Mega is now part of the Nationwide organization. I'm not really your typical consultant, I guess, in that I don't have any kind of a degree in that. As a matter of fact, I have a degree in psychology, but my background is the retail industry. I grew up my father had a grocery store when I was a kid. And so over the years, pretty well have done everything there is to do at one time or another. And in fact, you know, for anywhere from selling on sales floors to managing 35 stores at a time as a VP of a company. So I've got a very diverse background, and my people have very similar backgrounds. We have no MBAs that are associated with our company because I can't find one that's willing to travel our crazy schedule and stuff, especially in our current environment. But it's been a great ride getting the endorsement of Nationwide and other major organizations in the industry. It's been a privilege.
Well, you talk about that history. Is that really what attracted you and sort of had you interested in kind of going this route? You know, what is it that sort of brought you back to, you know, this retail space?
Yeah, actually, no, it was the opposite. I swore watching my father that I would never get into retail. You know, I hardly ever saw him. He'd go to work in the morning before I got up and come home after I went to bed. So I said, no way am I ever going to do that. But like I said, I majored in psychology. Well, that meant that I could get a job at a warehouse after I graduated. So happened to be a retail furniture warehouse. And so that's how my background evolved got into some consulting with another company for a couple of years and decided to go out on my own back in 2001.
Oh, that's awesome. And obviously, you know, we are very appreciative of that and the fact that you're in that. So it's an awesome relationship to have. And, you know, we're going to kind of lean into that a little bit today because the idea for this, you know, we had talked about it beforehand, but you know, the idea for this really, it's going to sound crazy to some people listening, but, you know, I'm sure in the news, if you follow retail news, you know that Jeff Bezos is stepping down as Amazon CEO and they have a whole transition plan in place that they're talking about. And, you know, I know people are listening, well, what the heck is Amazon, big, major international corporation? How's that going to be able to relate to me? But the idea being that, you know, they had a succession plan. He had a plan. It's not something, you know, that you're not just going to on a whim decide to step down from Amazon and not have something in place. And, you know, there are a lot of lessons to be learned from that. And you know, a conversation, I think that doesn't happen too often. You know, you don't hear it too often in retail, and we'll kind of get into that a little bit and the importance of it, why that's important and sort of how to go about it. But, you know, I know, you know, sort of talking, moving into this conversation now, you know, just looking at some stats, I did a little research on my own before diving into this. And I know there's like some roughly like 5.5 million family-owned businesses across the U.S. And I mean, that's a major part of the U.S. economy, 80 to 90% of companies in the U.S. being in North America, you know, are family-owned businesses. They account for, you know, almost 2/3 of GDP, more than half of the workforce. But I know you've got more numbers on how the handoff goes, you know, that move from one generation to the next. And I'm interested, just before we dive into the meat of this, you know, what numbers can you share on, you know, how succession planning, well, not succession planning, but how the succession typically goes?
Yeah, typically not well. Approximately half of all businesses, if it's family owned, survive that handoff from first to second generation. And then about a third of those going into the third generation survive. So the number that go to the third generation is about 30%. I actually had a client years ago that was a business still around, seventh generation.
Wow.
Like in the top 150 in terms of their age, a very small business in Pennsylvania, not a big business. But it's a rarity, you know. It's very, very difficult for these companies to do it for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned that. And I mean, I can even think to just a couple of interviews we've done on this podcast that are fourth, fifth generation. So the fact that we even get to talk to them is kind of, it's unique in and of itself. But, you know, what is it that makes these conversations so difficult for retailers to have this succession planning or exit strategy talk, you know, as a family owned or independently run business?
There's really two major fears, I guess. One of those fears is the sense of a loss of control. So if somebody else is going to take over, this is my baby. You know, I'm the one that started this thing, and the fear that somebody else is going to be running it and I can't make decisions anymore. That's one. Obviously, it's also the fear of facing the inevitable. We know there's two things that are inevitable, what, death and taxes, right? But we just really don't seem to want to face what we may be able to face the taxes with a good CPA, but the other part is very, very difficult. So it's just not something that people want to deal with. There's also an example of, I visited a member of the group a couple of weeks ago. And they have a son. Son's 33 years old. They're ready. I mean, they could step down and just go away tomorrow. I mean, they're ready for that, but they don't believe the son is ready. But there's been nothing put in place for him to get ready. He's been allowed to kind of do what he wanted to do in terms of working the job, but there's been absolutely no plan in place for him. None.
Interesting. Yeah. Aside from, facing reality, is there anything that can sort of be done to make this an easier conversation to have or to jumpstart that guy, aside from, now all of a sudden you're in a situation where you have to, I'm sure that's how a lot of them start, is like, all right, well, now we have to think about it because some event happened, there is a reason to transition. But is there a way to sort of, back a couple of steps before you get to that point to sort of start having these conversations?
Sure. When we work with, among other types of companies, startups, and one of the first things we do with a startup is to build their exit strategy. And it's just because we know how difficult it's going to be in place. And we know that without an exit strategy in place, things are not going to go well. If without an exit strategy, there's only one possibility: your company will eventually go out of business. You will close the doors. Obviously, that's something that Nationwide really doesn't want, because they want you to be around and continue to do business with them. And so the other possibilities is to, you can sell the business to an outside source. I had an example of a client years ago. They began with the end in mind. They wanted to get to the point where they had 25 stores, a combination of franchise stores and company-owned stores. They hit that number. They sold to a venture capitalist who then ran it in the ground in about 2 years. Wow. But they got out of it. They got out of it what they wanted out of it. And they can keep control through a very well-run management team-controlled company as they get into their later years, as long as they have competent people and great checks and balances in place, great processes. That's something that could work, or they could sell or leave it to a family member. But with no plan in place, without the concept of beginning with the end in mind, they just don't go through that process, and it's a reaction at the last possible second. And also, we have found over the years that it's a very difficult conversation for the up and coming generation to have with mom and dad, because they don't want to tell mom and dad, I think you're going to die here as a company, in the next few years, and I want some security. And I've seen so many cases over the years where they struggle to do that. And there's no plan in place. There's no business plan. There's no succession plan. There's not even estate plans. When our initial engagement with the client is something we call a business performance analysis, where we look at everything in the business. And one of the questions we ask, even before we come in, do you have an estate plan? Do you have a will? And I would say that approximately 2/3 of the folks that answer that question, no. And that's just really, really sad, because that's going to leave all kinds of family disharmony, and all kinds of potential financial losses to the up and coming family.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's, you know, a crazy way to think about it, but it makes a lot of sense. It's will planning is essentially, you know, what another is very similar in terms of how I, you know, the potential to save, you know, heartache or just the ability to run the business in the future. Just having that plan in place obviously makes this a lot simpler of a transition. And,
you know, for me to see the business succeed multiple generations and be profitable is very rewarding. But for me to see the family succeed is even more important. And when I don't see these things in place, I've seen so many times where family members break up. So they may have, let's say they have four children, one's involved in the business and three isn't, and three aren't. What they do is they, in their will, they love all their children equally. So we'll give them all 25%. Sure. Well, the one, his whole life is built around and his income is built around running a business. His heart and soul has been into it. But he or she now is going to be outvoted 3-1 because the others would rather just sell the thing off and let's get the assets. And I watch families break apart, which really I struggle with a lot more than even seeing a business break apart.
The interesting thing in kind of hearing you describe some of these situations is that, you know, there it's impossible. I think there's not a one size, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is, and you can kind of explain that. But it doesn't seem like there's a one size fits all. You know, solution for how to go about this. So for, you know, a majority, the numbers speak for themselves that you've been sharing. A majority of people listening to this probably don't have one in a succession plan in place or an exit strategy. So, you know, where do they even begin to do, you know, to have these conversations or to start this process?
Well, yeah, obviously it's going to take a team of people, and it's, you know, you bring in somebody from the outside, somebody that's objective, because when you're right in the middle of this and you have your heart and soul in something that you yourself have built, it's very difficult to see the forest for the trees. So you bring in somebody from the outside, you get involved, you need to find yourself a very good estate planning attorney, because there's so many different directions that you can go. You can go with, you know, you get the bigger businesses, I guess, if it's a good tax advantage, can do something called an ESOP, an employee stock option plan. You can, you know, all the different directions and all the things you can do. That's why you need a team of people, a good CPA and a good experienced estate planning attorney that understands this. And also getting involved with a financial planner, somebody that's what they do for a living. And just to get their input advice. You don't have to listen. You don't have to do what they tell you, but to get that objective, those objective viewpoints is to get you going in the right direction and to get started is absolutely critical.
Now, that's a lot of, you know, obviously outside help and, you know, certainly makes a lot of sense for inside the organization, inside the family. Is this something where it's just the owner, the person at the top that needs to be involved in this? Are there other people that should be having these conversations with?
Yeah, sure. There should be communication is often the thing that destroys businesses and families. So, you know, a regular family meeting, going over your plans, letting people know, getting everybody involved. And, you know, there's always an issue and a concern that what if I choose, if I have multiple family members or multiple qualified people. I'm working with a client right now he had two sons in the business, but the sons left the business for various reasons. They're no longer involved in it, actually started their own. And so we've built up and promoted a general manager from within the organization. And it's taken us about 2 years to get the guy up and running, but he is doing a phenomenal job. And that succession plan is in place. But the object of the game is to ensure that communication is there. Whatever your plan is, to talk to your family members, have regular meetings, maybe even once a quarter, because things happen and things change. Look what's happened over the last year, in this country and around the world. But constant communication, making sure that you're ready, because a lot of people, what happens to them is they wait too long, And then all of a sudden, what happens is that they start to get burned out. And the business, you know, if the business is not growing, by definition, the business is not growing. It's failing. It's because somebody else is going to come in there and right. chew them up. So, but they wait and it's going down. Like, oh, I got to sell. Well, that makes the business less marketable. It makes the business less attractive. The up and coming generation look at mom and dad. They see all the stress that they're under and have been under, and they say, "Why do I want that? There's got to be a better way. There's got to be something better for me to do with my life." And they then fail to be able to attract them. And also, what they don't realize is they have so much proprietary materials. The more things that they have in place, it could be anything from utilizing a budget. To be able to plan their financial success rather than accepting it. It could be things like job descriptions. It could be employee job evaluation processes. It could be organizational charts, a business plan. The more of these kinds of things, CRMs, you know, where yeah. we're able to go back and we are able to see what our customer base is. All of these things have value. And if you try to sell to an outside company, unfortunately, the numbers that I've been given is somewhere in the area of less than 10% of all businesses that are brokered actually sell them.
Wow.
And so that's, you know, because they're just, you know, somebody coming in looking at it. There's no delegation processes. There are no systems and processes in place. Mom and dad are working 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week to keep the thing going. And gee, that sounds like fun. I think I'll go buy myself a job, you know, and right. that's really not, and those businesses can sell. It does happen. I've been called in on numerous occasions over the years to actually look at businesses that people want to buy. But that's almost by chance or something that they decided they wanted to move to a certain area or they grew up in an area, they wanted to return and they wanted to go buy a business and a specific business. And I go in and take a look at it. But if it's not highly marketable, if it's just something that's so dependent on right. one or two people, and when you take those one or two people out of the equation, the business is not very attractive and not very marketable. The odds of it selling are to an outside source, if that's the way you want to go, is slim.
So, I mean, then my head's spinning with potential questions here, but one that I know stands out, and maybe because it's the next I had written down here, is you know, when is there a time that's right to start looking at a succession? I know you said with startups, you sort of, you know, start that process right away. You know, with these family-owned businesses that may have been around for a couple of decades, and it just isn't something. I mean, is there ever a too late, or you know, when is really the right time to start looking at this?
I know a few years ago at a prime time, a member of the group sat down with me, and the business was definitely going into this direction. Their income level was quite low. As a matter of fact, when I looked at the lack of profit, the losses that she was experiencing, and I looked at what she was trying to pay herself, I had to tell her I couldn't help her. It was too late. There was really nothing that I could do. Her best bet, honestly, was just to close the business and try something else if she had the energy to do it. So yeah, there are times when it is too late, but in most cases, that's not the case. It's just a matter of really stepping up. So I guess if you can't begin with the end in mind, at least during the process, have that end in mind and put all these things in place, and it's doable. So even if it's, you know, I mean, God forbid, if somebody tells you that you've got some kind of a disease and you only have a few months to live, at least gain control now. Get all this stuff in order, because it's going to save your family so much stress at the end, and dramatically increase the probability of a successful transition to keep that business going.
Yeah, no, and I mean, it kind of, you know, it sounds like I in terms of planning something like this, it sounds very similar to business continuity. But like, if someone gets sick and you have to take an extended leave of absence, you know, you kind of have plans in place. Who picks up what slack, and how the business continues to go on? Is it similar to that? You know, can you kind of, if you haven't started and you want to start thinking about it, and maybe you don't want to completely have the end in mind. Is that a good sort of practice run for what would be a succession plan?
Depends, honestly. I mean, Nationwide has a lot of very small members, and it's not unusual for one of those companies to have a single point of failure in the business. They're it. There is nobody else. That if something happens to them, that business will struggle to survive and probably won't. But the fact is that if we get started early enough and we realize that we want that continuity, we want the business to continue not only for ourselves, but often we look at the people that have been with us. One of the neat things about working with the independent that I love is what you don't see in corporate America anymore is that it's not unusual, small town America, to have employees that have been with them 15, 20, yep. 25, 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
So I've got one right now, one member I'm working with right now. But I think I'm going to be on the phone with her as soon as we hang up. They have a father and son. The father's been there for 50 years and the son's been there for 35 years.
Wow.
Well, you know, if a business goes under at that point, then that's part of the reason that they want to keep it going, that they want to keep it going for their employees. They want to keep it going for their towns. I mean, they bring something very, very special. And, you know, everything in this world cycles. And, you know, there's been so much going towards organizations like Amazon. And of course, even prior to that, you got the Home Depots and the Lowe's of the world and whatever. And even prior to that, I guess Sears or whatever, you got all these big conglomerates and everything seems to move in that direction. But everything goes in cycles. And all of a sudden, one of these big companies go under and then the manufacturers go, well, where is the little guy? You know, I need the little guy again. Well, guess what? You know, so I'm very dedicated to that as Nationwide, to keep the little guy going. That's what this is all about, you know, is finding a way to make that happen.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And kind of to that point about the cycles, you think about the family cycles within a business. And I feel like, is it possible that a lot of, you know, what maybe some of these family run businesses struggle with is waiting for that next in line to be, you know, ready, or if they're not already involved in the business, waiting for them to decide like, all right, now I'll come home and hang around and, you know, start to groom myself to be that next person. Is it a lot of that waiting for that person to sort of realize that they are next in line?
Yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for me to find when if I'm starting to work with somebody and they're looking to put together a succession plan and they feel that even if they have a family member that's there or even some really good employees that have been there a long time, but there's nobody that they have confidence in turning the business over to. Well, first of all, I want to go and I want to actually get in there and take a look at it because my opinion oftentimes is considerably different than them. But I'm also going to be asking questions about other children, if you will, that are in the business that were not in the business, that might have moved away or whatever, and they may have JOBs somewhere and with limited income potential, and they just don't understand the potential of their own businesses, which, quite honestly, most of the members of this group don't. They don't get the fact that there's things that they can do to engineer a lot more success, thereby making the business look so much more attractive to the up and coming generation, not just financially, but in terms of how it's run, how things are delegated, how they run the business through their people. And so, yeah, I want to know all about, I'm going to dig into all kinds of things, nephews, but I'm looking for the things that they haven't even thought about. I sat down with a member of the group, years ago, his son moved away about 70 miles away and took a JOB running a business somewhere else. And he thought the son was real happy. The son was probably making $60,000, $70,000 a year. But the potential of his business, if it was run right, and I showed him how it could be run right, was many times that. And the son didn't see it. And honestly, the father didn't see it and didn't know how to communicate it. So yeah, we want to look at all those things potentially and any talent that's out there. We want to understand what that talent is and to make the business attractive to them.
Just from a personnel standpoint, kind of a two-part question, you know, how often do you find that for the family owned or independent run business that, you know, there's the next in line of father to son or, you know, the next generation is there, but they don't end up actually being the right person. Like it's actually an outside family member that ends up being the right person to sort of run that business, you know, when it comes time to hand it off.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's very frequently, I like to give examples of clients, right? So I have a client that had a fairly, one of the larger members of the group, actually, there were three brothers involved. Father had no plan in place, and one day he decides that he's not going to wake up in the morning. And so each brother was given a third of the business in the will. And the problem with that is that you had one brother that really had the talent and the ability to be able to run the business. He had leadership, innate leadership skills. He had good management acumen. He was really prepared to do it. A second brother he loved the product. You know, he loved going to prime time. Or to the home furnishings,
right?
And High Point or something.
Yep.
He loved doing all those kinds of things. And he loved the relationships that he had with vendors and at all levels. And the third really had a piece of property out west of the store, and all he wanted to do was spend time on this property and kind of enjoy life. And yet they all had a third. Well, the problem with that is that. There was no majority ownership, so nobody was the ultimate decision maker, and that caused a lot of problems for the company, a lot of stress. So in that particular case, we needed to grant the brother that wanted to not work grant his wish. They had to buy him out. And then the other two brothers took control, and I helped them to understand that one of them needed to have a little bit more ownership so that decisions could be made and the business was able to survive. But that was very difficult. That was incredibly stressful because the planning process was not in place. Again, conceptually, right. We love all of our kids. we don't want to show favorites, right?
Right.
Unfortunately, I have two sons. One has a master's degree in engineering. You put him in a room with 100 kids, 100 people, they're kids, he's in his 40s. You put him in a room with 100 people, and nobody likes him. You know, the other, you put him in a room with 100 people, he's got 100 friends, you know. So there are just innate differences. Even though the environment may be identical, there are certainly innate differences in people. And it's important for us to be able to recognize that and plan for all that. In our estate planning and in our succession planning,
and kind of following up to that and to that point, you know, that in terms of yes, you want to almost devil's advocate to that point, you know, you don't want to play favorites, and you want to show that you love all your kids the same. In doing so, in planning and maybe identifying who it is that's going to be next, does it have the potential to sort of disenfranchise either your other family members that, you know, thought that maybe they were next in line? And have you seen situations like that, or how a business works through that? Or even, you know, maybe not a family member, but someone else in the business that thought they had a good shot at, you know, kind of advancing their career, only to find out that someone else has been handpicked.
Yeah, but they might as well find out now. I mean, you know, so yeah. They're going to find out sooner or later. So that's obviously an issue and a concern. But a bigger concern is not making those decisions and failing to do that. And that's what I see most of the time. I don't really see that other issue popping up very often. I mean, it comes up and we talk about it, you know, client that has multiple siblings but they've brought on a general manager, the general manager is stronger than both of those children. Those are very, very difficult. Yeah. That business is not going to be successful most likely with, either one of the children that are coming up, unless things can change. But oftentimes what happens is that older generation has simply not done anything to hold their children accountable to be able to ensure that they're going to be ready to take that move. So they look at them and they say, well, he or she, they don't have the ability. They don't have the desire. They're not willing to work 80 or 90 hours a week like I am. Well, okay. That's probably a good thing, you know. If they want to have a life, let's come up with a plan that you could accept, where you understand that they are willing at times, if they have to roll up their sleeves and work their tails off, they're willing to do it, but they have an even bigger drive to be able to run the business than rather having the business run them.
Now, to bring this home, I want to talk about sort of some of the other major challenges or hurdles that you see in terms of succession planning or pitfalls that, you know, you would warn other independent businesses to sort of avoid as they go through this process? What are some of those big things out there that you see commonly happen, you know, as a business prepares or goes through the succession planning process?
Yeah, honestly, I think we probably have covered most of them already. I think, again, it's just this constant willingness or non-willingness to face the inevitable. It's the ability to look at our that up and coming generation or the people in our company, and we say we just don't have anybody that can take over. But there's nothing in place at all to help them to develop their skill set. For me, what I love to see is if there's a family member that's in the business, first of all, get them out of the business for a while, let them go out and do some things on their own and see what's out there in the world and then come back. But when they come back, they need to be able to demonstrate, they don't have to be necessarily the best at everything, but they need to be able to understand everything. So I would, you know, we start out, I'm very sales oriented, obviously, that to me, I want them on the sales floor. I want them to understand what it means to interact with the customer, to show that they are going to stay in touch and follow up and maintain the mission of the company, to make sure that's clear, that they're going to, that customer comes first and they understand everything about that and can sell, that they understand, it's not unusual if I have a husband and wife team, which is a lot of the members of the group.
Yeah.
That one of the two of them loves numbers. They love to look at the financial statement. And so when I sit down with them and go over those aspects of their business, their tails are wagging a million miles an hour. And the other one, I've got to keep slapping in the face. Now focus, you know? And so they bring up that second generation coming up, their generation coming up, and they have no exposure to a financial statement whatsoever. They'd have no idea how the business is doing. There's no plan for any of these kinds of things. So that, you know, to make sure that we have them do that. We have them understand merchandising process, how to flow goods, the importance of it. Not just being able to budget and have a financial statement, but understand cash flow and how to build a better balance sheet. And how to understand make sure that how poor merchandising processes can destroy a business, you know, especially right now. It's kind of a scary time right now because people have not been able to get product. You can't get appliances. Right. I have clients that typically might be running about a $200,000 underlivered backlog. They sell something, it takes maybe a couple of months to get the product into the customer, but are now running 1.2, 1.5 million. So now the tendency is going to be as we start to catch up, man, let me go ahead, buy a whole bunch of stuff and let me load up my warehouse. And then of course, whenever you load up your warehouse, Murphy's Law of Merchandise kicks in, yep. Which says, now that I've got it, I can't sell it. And then to have them understand, you know, merchandising processes, to have them understand how to build people up, how to manage people, how to run an organized company, that where they can have their quality of life, but where they can have whatever leadership skills they have that are innate, actually come out and enable them to be incredibly successful. So anything that's associated with the running of the business, giving them an opportunity to point by point to spend enough time there so they can demonstrate what they can and cannot do and work on their weak skills. And what I see instead is the parents just, they don't know how to do it. So they kind of give up.
Right.
And they say that my son, my daughter just doesn't have the drive, doesn't have the ambition, is not willing to make a decision. You're not letting them make a decision. They make a decision and you say, no, we're not doing it that way. let them fail. Let people fail.
Yeah.
That's how we learn. And as long as they don't keep failing at the same thing over and over again. If I bring on somebody to JRM, sales and management, and they don't fail and they don't make mistakes, they don't last for long. I need them to push the envelope. I need them to try different things. Otherwise, why do I need them?
Right. And like most things in life it's a great balancing act and kind of finding where, that perfect middle is it's tough, but it's doable. And as I think we've talked about, there's processes and ways to go about it. And it's an important, process to run through as well for many reasons. But, you know, we talk about those numbers at the top, and this industry, this channel will always be a big part of the U.S. economy, and ensuring their continued success moving forward is, you know, obviously in everyone's best interest. And, you know, so I appreciate it. It's a conversation that, like I said, you know, is one I was looking forward to having. And I think, you know, you did it justice, Joe. I appreciate it. And, you know, this was a lot of fun, and I hope to, you know, continue having these conversations, because it's definitely not a one and done, one that needs to continue to happen and need to happen more often. So I appreciate you taking the time and at least broaching the subject with us.
Appreciate the opportunity. Enjoyed it also. Thank you.
All right. And a big thanks again to Joe for taking time out of his busy schedule and in between calls to chat with us about this topic, because like I said at the top, it's a conversation that doesn't happen too often, that needs to happen more often, you know, if we want businesses to have sustained success and legacies to last, you know, beyond just that first or second generation. And, you know, any efforts we can put towards making those conversations happen, or making the, taking sort of the uneasiness around them away, is enough. And hopefully this podcast is just one step in that direction. So appreciate Joe taking his time. And as always, appreciate you listening to the Independent Thinking Podcast, and we will catch you next time.